Welcome back, everyone. This is episode 33 of the Golden Goal Podcast. It is Super Bowl Sunday, actually, but we're actually here to talk about the real football. No hand egg ball. We're here to talk about the real footy. Here on Super Bowl Sunday, we apologize for having to push this episode back. It was actually my birthday on Thursday, and Javi was sick. So we had to push this back a little bit, but luckily there was just some FA Cup stuff going on early in the week. So here we are. Javi, how you doing today?
Doing good, dude. Doing good. Yeah, like you said, we didn't have... I mean, yeah, I was sick, and it was your birthday this week, and there's not really a lot to talk about, actually, from last week. It was all FA Cup games and EFL Cup, so obviously not a whole lot to talk about, but...
Yeah, so we wanted to figure we just wait until all the games for this weekend, Premier League, we're through with, and then as well as transfer deadline day, we're going to talk about that as well. Yeah. But first, we want to start off the show on a bit of a serious note. Kobe Bryant passed away at the, I think this time last week, right?
Yep.
This exact day last week. And even though he was a basketball player and this is a soccer podcast, the dude was probably one of the best athletes of all time in any sport, on and off the court. And he touched the lives of many young athletes during his time in the NBA as well as after he retired, I thought. And he was also a big soccer guy as well.
Yeah.
And he was very involved with both the women's game, because he did have four daughters.
Yep.
And he actually, which I didn't know, was an AC Milan fan. So, and he lived in Italy for a little while, too. Yeah. So shout out to him. I don't know if you got anything to say.
Yeah, no. I was going to say it's super rare to see an athlete of his caliber to be like a true fan of another sport. You don't really see that a lot, to be honest with you. Like someone that's like really good in one sport be like a super, I wouldn't say noob, but like a fan, like a fanboy pretty much, like of a different sport. And he was big in the soccer community. I don't know. I mean, if a lot of people that are listening to this podcast saw, I mean, AC Milan did a tribute for him before their game. I mean, Barcelona was another, like, you know, they were tweeting out a lot of stuff about him. A lot of players were, you know, tweeting out, posting Instagrams, you know, giving their condolences. A big one was Ronaldinho. Ronaldinho and Kobe Bryant were, like, really really good friends. Neymar was doing it. Mbappe. I mean, anyone you can really think of, high profile, was, you know, was giving their condolences.
Yeah. It just shows the reach he had on athletes everywhere in any sport. He kind of just left his mark on, you know, the work that it takes to be the greatest, a great at your craft. And actually, a nice little thing I also heard this week, and this was from Tony Meola. He was a former U.S. goalkeeper. He said that when he was with the national team in his playing days, and this was like in the 90s when, you know, soccer here wasn't like cool yet.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, obviously abroad, like it's the biggest sport in the world, but here it was just starting out. MLS was just getting its feet wet, new league, and the national team, you know, no one really cared about the national team. They weren't a cool team to follow yet.
Yeah.
And he met Kobe at like some sort of sports function.
Uh-huh.
And he said, yeah, I'm on the men's national team and play goalkeeper. And he was so enthusiastic about it, even though like soccer wasn't cool in the country yet. And he even supported them then as well as I'm sure the women's national team as well. So. Yeah. Very cool. Loved the game of soccer, and rest in peace, rest easy, legend.
Rest in peace to him, his daughter, obviously, Gigi, and then everyone that passed away in that helicopter accident. But, yeah, we just figured we'd touch upon this before the podcast because, you know, he was a big influence not only in the basketball world but soccer world and in everyone's life. So, rest in peace, Kobe. You're a fucking GOAT, bro. So,
absolutely. Well, now I'll do some more positive vibes.
Yep.
We had some games this weekend. We also had transfer deadline day. What do you want to do first? You want to do deadline day first, or you want to start off with the games? Or do you want to start with the EFL Cup upset?
Yeah, let's do the upset first, and then we'll do transfer deadlines, because I actually kind of want to talk about that, too. So
Aston Villa, against all odds, I don't think anyone saw that coming. Moving on to Wembley, 2-1 over Leicester.
I know, that's nuts. I didn't see this coming because they're doing really bad in the league. They don't, They don't really have a lot of attacking power besides Grealish. Maybe Grealish is probably their number one guy that's, like, you know, involved with a lot of the positives going on in that club. So I was shocked, bro. Leicester not looking too hot right now. And we'll get into their game too as well in the Premier League. But they just kind of they've dipped in form a little bit. You know, Madison's not really, you know, he's still a good player, don't get me wrong, but I just feel like he's kind of stagnated a little bit so far in the season, in the new year, and I don't know, we'll have to see how Leicester continues, but I thought for sure this could have been a trophy that Leicester could have won for sure.
Yeah, and Jamie Vardy out in this game, well, he ended up coming on as a sub, but he had a bit of a knock from the last match week. I know, and not having him for the full 90 definitely hurt them. But yeah, Leicester, we're finally starting to see them dip in form. They don't have a lot of depth, which we've talked about, I'm sure, in the past. Yep. They have a very good starting 11, but then, you know, off the bench, they don't really have anyone that they could bring off the bench outside of, like, this Dennis Pryett, who's not a consistent starter.
Yeah.
He actually didn't even play in this game. But they don't have a lot of depth, so as this season goes on, they're going to have to – they've been having to play the same 11 every game, game in, game out. Yeah. And it's finally starting to take a toll on them, which I'm not surprised.
No, it definitely is. And I wanted to – I mean – credit to Aston Villa. I don't know if you remember seeing this. I'm sure you didn't watch this game, but I don't know if you saw the highlights. The ball to Trezeguet, I think his name is.
Yeah.
That was I don't know who passed that ball, but that was such a delicious ball.
El Mohammedi. Yeah. That was a delicious ball.
He just curled it in there, bro. From not necessarily like a good angle, to be honest with you. It wasn't like, you know,
an early cross. Early from, I think cross. Almost half field.
And it looks easy when you watch it on TV, but to get it, like, to perfectly just get into that spot where Trezeguet was, it's super hard. It's not easy. So credit to Aston Villa for sure, man, for pulling this upset. I still think they're going to get their cheeks clapped by City in the final, unless City plays, like, you know, their U-22s or something like that. But I don't know. I don't know. We'll see. I'll have to see.
Honestly, this is probably the lone bright spot of the EFL Cup this year, because everyone's shitting on it. Not even just us, but like all the pundits and the commentators, they want something to be done with this competition to either tweak it to where, like, they take every team that qualified for Europa or Champions League the previous season to not participate. Yeah. Or to scrap the competition altogether. But seeing a team like Aston Villa, big club, but, you know, kind of like you said, in the bottom of the table there, in the relegation zone, make it to the final, like, that's probably been the lone bright point for the competition so far.
Yeah, and you know, real quick also, like, I, for sure they should get, if anything else, like, at the very least, get rid of the double legs.
Yeah,
they should just keep one leg for that. I don't even think it should.
Well, double legs for. Whatever reason, the two leg is only in the semifinal, which I don't understand.
Yeah, they should get rid of that. Like, especially just because during the semifinals, it's like one of the most crucial points in the season for the Premier League and for you know, European cups as well.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, I just think that, you know, playing a double leg in the semifinals just doesn't really make sense. It just tires out the players. But anyways, it'll be Aston Villa versus Man City in the final of the EFL Cup. I don't know when that is. Do you know?
I think that's in the next week or so, like midweek, maybe.
I
have to check, though.
I predict it's going to be like Watford last year, where City just creamed them.
I have a feeling too. And City's been, we'll get to them.
Yeah.
They haven't been in the best form. Pep's going to want them to go out there and
probably crush them.
Kick the shit out of them, basically. But EFL Cup. Aston Villa with a chance for a trophy, for the first trophy in God knows how long. Yeah. So credit to them for sure. And then do you want to do Premier League games or transfer deadline day?
We can do Prem League games, actually. We'll go Prem League and then we'll do transfer deadline.
Okay, so midweek, Liverpool beat up on West Ham, pretty comfortable win. Really not going to spend too much time on that. But then the early game Saturday, Leicester tied 2-2 with Chelsea. And now we could really get into Leicester's drop in form here. they have not been as convincing. They have lost. They lost in the Carabao Cup, and then they won at West Ham the week before. But before that, they had three games, tied to Aston Villa in the first leg, lost to Southampton, and lost to Burnley, and now a tie against Chelsea.
Yep.
But they have not looked convincing recently.
No, and what we were really praising them for before they kind of hit this bad form was how consistent they were against almost every team they played, besides maybe the top six. But Every other team, they kind of took care of business. And as you were saying, I mean, they lost 2-1 to Southampton, which it happens. It's fine, like, you know. But then back to back, they lose to Burnley 2-1 also. Yeah. Which,
and those are games the beginning of the season that they're pretty showing comfortably that they could win.
So I don't really. I think it comes. What it comes down to is, like you said, it was their depth. I don't think they have a lot of I don't think they have a lot of that. So if, you know, say like Jamie Vardy had some injuries, some niggles that he's probably playing on right now. Who knows?
Yeah.
They don't really have someone else that can come up and do a job. I mean, they have Iheanacho, but
he's shown some signs recently, but
as far as consistency, like, definitely not. No.
And then they have Andre Gray, who like never scores, and he's a striker. Yeah. Harvey Barnes has actually shown some flashes, but. Back line, like, they don't have any other outside backs. I know. No. It's just, I mean, they got Fuchs, but he's ancient now. And then, so it's just Chilwell, Pereira, and then the two center backs. I don't remember the last time they came off the field. No. They don't even have any other center backs, I don't think.
No.
Well, actually, they did sign someone on deadline day, so when we get to that.
Okay, yeah. We'll talk about that.
We'll talk about that.
So
they brought in a center back.
So, yeah, they're really bare bones everywhere. And again, in that middle, Madison has kind of like dipped a little bit, and he was kind of like that creative spark in the middle that Leicester had. And Ndidi, I think, was injured too. I know he didn't play today.
Yeah, Choudhury had to play that holding mid against Chelsea.
So, you know, I it's more of a question, you know, going into the summer, into this next transfer window, they're gonna really wanna be able to kind of get a couple players in each position, well, you know, like a, you know, forward, winger, mid, and like another center back or outside back, just to kind of reinforce that squad, especially if they have ambitions to continue to, you know, fight for that top four. And then, I mean, if they get Champions League this year, to compete in the Champions League, because next year it's going to get hard for them being in the Champions League. Because I think this year they'll still make it.
Yeah, if they don't have depth next year,
they're
going to be in trouble.
And it's going to be like, I think what will happen, if they don't sign players, it'll be like last time when they won the league and they were in the Champions League. They kind of were spread thin within the league and the Champions League. So
mm-hmm. I agree.
So we'll have to see.
On the flip side, Chelsea still don't know how to defend.
Nope.
2-2. They let up two goals in this game. The second 2-2 draw in a row. Tied Arsenal as well the last match week, mm-hmm. and they lost to Newcastle the week before. So Chelsea, still not consistent. Also, Kepa benched in this game.
Yeah.
Willy Caballero got the start. Perhaps that's a little bit of Lampard's way of giving him a wake-up call, a little bit of a kick in the ass, say, like, you better get your shit together. We spent a lot of money on you, and you're not showing your value, which we've talked about that in the past. I don't think he's showing what they paid him for, whatever it was, 80 million or whatever the hell.
No.
But hopefully it's a wake-up call for him. Willy Caballero gets the start, and both goals he couldn't really do anything about is just kind of his back line letting him down, but maybe he gets the start next game around too.
Yeah, maybe. And speaking of Chelsea, well, we'll get to this also in our transfer deadline news, but Chelsea didn't sign anyone in the transfer window, so
which surprised me.
Because if anything, they were the ones that really needed the player since they didn't have a summer transfer window. So, questionable decision there. Even if it's just like, you know, a loan option or just something that can just kind of, you know, someone can come in there and do a job for them, you know, in defense or wherever, you know, they need. Because I know, as far as, you know, forwards, you know, Willian has been. Pedro is getting old. Tammy Abraham, we said, lost some steam. I mean, they didn't get like a striker either. There's a lot of gaps in there that they.
I know fans have been giving Hudson-Odoi a very hard time because they were expecting a lot more from him, and especially with Pulisic out, I don't even know when he's due to return back. But with him out, Hudson-Odoi is kind of have to, you know, he's next man up, and he's kind of been underwhelming.
Yeah, he has.
But this fan base, you know how they get, this Chelsea fan base. They as soon as they the things start to go wrong, they just like lose their shit. Yeah, no matter yeah. what the situation is or how things were the year before. I mean, we saw it after Conte won the title his first season. Next year, like, he lost a few games and he was gone.
Yeah, yeah.
And, you know, here Lampard is, his first season in charge. He's got a bunch of young kids, a lot of them through the academy. And he had no transfer window to bring anyone in, essentially, in the summer.
Uh-huh.
And here they are still being just fickle as shit, this Chelsea fan base. And it's like, this is a young team. It's going to take some time. There was actually, I actually watched a video of a Chelsea fan account. He had like 6,000 followers, English guy. And essentially what he was saying, like, you have to be a little bit more supportive when a team is in this phase where you have a lot of young kids that still need to develop. Mason Mount was playing in the championship last year.
Yeah, yeah.
Of course he's going to be inconsistent.
Tammy Abraham also. He's playing,
it's a huge
yeah.
jump.
Yeah.
And he had two assists in this game, but, you know, there was a big dry spell there where Mason Mount wasn't really playing effectively.
Yeah.
And Tammy, as you said, he's dropped off as well. But that's going to happen. You have a young team, and you didn't bring anyone in to really mold around them. Of course, there's going to be ups and downs.
I agree. I mean, all these players that are playing right now were all loaned out to championship teams for the most part. So, you know, it's unrealistic to expect them to come in and do a job consistently. They've done an admirable job for sure, though.
They have. A lot better than I thought at the beginning of the year.
So did I, yeah. You know, the thing is, where my disappointment lies in is that they didn't really do anything in the transfer window to kind of just give some sort of boost to the squad. But, you know, to each their own. I don't know what goes on in the background over at Chelsea as far as transfers go, but I'm sure they're going to go into the summer spending some cash flow for sure.
They should, for sure. The last thing I'll say about this game is no one wants to take a clear handle, have a clear handle on fourth place.
No. Every time
teams drop points, the teams who have a chance to like hurdle someone, they never take the opportunity to do it.
So that's, I mean, Chelsea, every time Chelsea ties or loses, then Tottenham, Man U, or Arsenal, or any other team that's up there either like ties also or they lose. So it's a clusterfuck.
Yeah, that's really the only race that's worth paying attention to. Yeah. The fourth through sixth place spots there for the rest of the season. But moving on, Bournemouth, huge win over Aston Villa. Mm-hmm. They, I believe, move out of the relegation zone with that. Yeah, they jump into 16th. And not too much to say about that one. Bournemouth, not a good side. Shows that Aston Villa, their season success is going to depend on A, if they avoid relegation, and B, winning that
EFL Cup,
which I don't see happening. But Bournemouth, huge win for them. Sheffield with another Sheffield-esque win.
1-0.
1-0, went off of an own goal.
That win, though, brought them up to sixth place, 36 points. So Sheffield United is 5 points away from fourth. Just let that soak in.
And even though I'm not going to talk much about this game, I'm going to give you Sheffield's next five games. Home to Bournemouth, home to Brighton, home to Norwich, away to Newcastle. All teams in, like, the bottom six.
Are Sheffield going to get top four?
They very well might. I mean, then they have United and Spurs back-to-back, but then they get Burnley again.
Yeah, but anyone they play, even if it's top six, they always just – there's always a chance for them.
No one beats the shit out
of them. There's always a chance for them to win.
Yeah.
Like, so it's like
– or at least grab a point.
Even if they're going to play all top six teams back-to-back in a row, like, I would be like, they could probably nick some – they can nick up some points off of these teams easily. So – They
played City tough the two times they played them this year. United, they tied 3-3.
Yeah.
Liverpool, I think, beat them 1-0 and 2-0.
Yeah.
They're
not an easy team to play against. And
tough to break down.
They have such a good – they don't have anyone flashy. They just have a good coach with a good system, and everyone is bought into that system. Yep. So that comes to tell you that it's not always about the players. It's about the system you play. So
And then as for Crystal Palace, real quick, I think they're back to reality because for a while they were kind of
they were like
top seven for a while there, and now they finally dropping points and they're back to being bottom half and close to the drop zone once again. But if you think about it,
I mean they're only
14th place. They're in 30 points, and then sixth place is 36.
So only 6 points off of six. So yeah, it's still all so close, bro. I mean,
and even tighter, 9th through 14th is only separated by 3 points.
I mean, all it takes is for one of these teams to go on a few games, you know, a few good games in a run, and then, you know, they could end up from 11th place to 6th place or even better.
Yeah, a couple wins, put a couple wins together. There's a little ton of movement in that table each week, it seems like. But then Southampton get it beaten by Liverpool quite handily.
Yep.
4-0. Salah with 2 goals. Mane out in this game. I don't know how long he's out for, but Champions League's around the corner, so it's kind of important.
Yep.
Norwich and Newcastle, that game happened 0-0. Everton 3-2 down a man. They come back and from 2-0 down, I'm pretty sure, in this game.
Yeah, Mina scores in the 46th minute and the 49th minute of extra time in the first half. And then Walcott scores in the 90th minute. To win
Moise Keane, the assist on the winner.
Moise Keane. I thought Watford was going to had this game. I mean, I saw they were up, and I'm like, they're actually going to probably pull a win here. But
yeah, and, you know, this is a real kick in the nuts for them, too, because they went on that nice run with Pearson when he first took over.
Yeah.
And they got up out of the relegation zone, and now they're back in 19th.
Oh man.
They're definitely like not the team they were at the beginning of the year, and I still think they'll somehow stay up, but that could put a damper on their form for a little while.
No, they do, and then they have Brighton who've been playing really well, United away, which is always pretty decently hard, and then they have Liverpool at home, which again will be hard. So so we'll have to see. I kind of hope they make it out though, to be honest with you. They kind of turn it around. West Ham, though, is also in the relegation zone.
I think this will be the first time in our episodes I actually want to, like, break down West Ham.
Yeah, that's fine.
Because West Ham were up 3-1 with 30 minutes to go. They gave up 2 goals in the 5 minutes in after the 75th minute. And they tie 3-3 against Brighton. And Brighton, you know, they've been playing a lot better football this year than they were last probably 2 or 3 years since they've been in the Premier League.
Mm-hmm.
But West Ham, man. I think West Ham is the worst run club in England right now. Worse than United. They don't spend any money. And when they do, it's like on guys that end up being busts. Their ownership is all over the place. They can't solidify a good coach. The coaches are in and out of there like crazy.
Mm-hmm.
They bring back David Moyes. Like, is David Moyes the best person that you could think of to really save yourself from being relegated? I would hope not. But apparently it is. And here they are with a lot better team than the likes of Aston Villa, Bournemouth, Brighton, Crystal Palace even. Yeah. And here they are in 18th place.
Yeah. Ah, oh, man. I feel bad for Haller, too, man. He just...
Yeah.
He should have just stayed at Frankfurt, if honestly. Yeah.
And they have no creative players to give him any service.
No, yeah. I just feel so bad because that was a big transfer back in the summer. And he was a baller for Frankfurt in the Bundesliga. And then... to be honest, not when I think about it more, like I wonder why he even decided West Ham would be a good choice for him. I don't know. I
mean, at the end of the day, West Ham's a big club.
Yeah, they are a big club. Yeah,
they've been underwhelming for too long now, but they're a big club, and
they're in the relegation zone right now.
They're in the fucking relegation zone, and they've got some good pieces. I like Declan Rice. I don't think he's been playing up to potential, but I like Declan Rice. I like Haller. I like Antonio. He's kind of like a Adama Traore-esque player. Agbona and Issa Diop, I think, are good players. They have a solid goalkeeper in Fabianski. Obviously, their outside backs aren't the greatest. I think it's a concern that a 30-plus-year-old Mark Noble has to start every game. Yeah. Like, you can't find anyone better than Mark Noble. And they still don't have a ton of depth. I mean, Lanzini isn't the same player he was before he tore his ACL.
Yeah.
And this Fornals kid is still young, and he hasn't really been given enough of a chance, I don't think.
Yeah.
And here they are.
Lanzini.
They give up so many points. They concede so many points off of winning positions, I feel.
Yeah.
And in games that they should be doing a ton better, they just don't show up.
No, they don't. The point you made about Lanzini, that's been hugely disappointing because he's only had 2 assists in 19 matches, 0 goals also. That's, for a number 10,
That's terrible.
That's terrible. And to his standards, because I've seen him play when he was in his prime, I mean, he was a good player.
Very good player.
And like you said, after this injury, I don't know if it's like, you know, loss of confidence, you know, loss of, you know, kind of direction as to where the club's going. I mean, the mood there is probably super somber as well. So, I mean, it's just disappointing to see this because you're right, they do have some good pieces of the puzzle, but there's some players on here that I've seen here for a while that are just like, dude, like, what are you still doing here?
Yeah.
Like, you know, like Mark Noble, I mean, he's been a good servant for the club. I mean, he's been, you know, he's nothing special, right? But he's done a job. But he's over 30 and he's still starting.
He's like your Michael Carrick.
Yeah,
almost.
But you think he's like, you know, he should not be starting game in, game out anymore. Not for a club like West Ham. And you're right, West Ham is a big club. Like some people that aren't really familiar with the Premier League that much or soccer will just look at this and be like, oh, they're just like a shitty team, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
But they're actually a big club. They usually always get top 8 consistently.
Yeah. Back in like, I don't know, maybe 7 years ago. You know, they were a top half team,
yeah.
Almost every year, and now it seems like they're always fighting to stay up, and they don't really get put in the spotlight because United always seems to have that in terms of like their recent poor decisions and how their club is being run.
Well, West Ham.
So like, not a lot of people know what exactly it is that West Ham isn't doing right. As opposed to United, where it's like Ed Woodward, you know, they don't have a sporting director. Ed Woodward's pulling all the strings in terms of player acquisitions. Glazers don't want to spend money, this and that. They don't want to go down that rabbit hole again. But with West Ham, like, no one's really talking about it, but I'm hearing that, like, their training grounds are, like, some of the worst in the league.
Uh-huh.
So infrastructure-wise,
shit,
they're way behind. Yeah. They moved out of the Bullen Ground, I think that was what it was called, or Upton Park, one of the two, like 4 years ago, and they've been playing in London Stadium, and I believe that was supposed to be like a temporary home, but they're like still there, and the fans miss the old stadium, basically, but the owner doesn't seem to really give a shit, like he doesn't seem to really want to invest in the club, and it's just... seems to just go down the shitter like a little bit more and more each year.
Do you think that fans are going to start? I mean, I'm surprised fans haven't been like protesting towards the owners. Maybe they have.
I really don't know. They very well might have already.
I mean, right, especially how close they are to the relegation. I mean, they are in the relegation zone. And if they continue this form, very could well be relegated if they don't really turn it around.
Yeah. And then, I mean, they have to play City next. And then they've got Liverpool. So those are two L's.
Yeah.
And then they get Southampton, but I mean they can't beat anyone.
No.
Like they'll get a win every 5 games, but like
that's relegation type.
Even with the team they have on paper, despite it being player for player maybe better than some of these teams, those players just look just like deflated.
Yeah.
Basically. And maybe that's a lot to do with how the club is being run behind the scenes that a lot of people don't know about.
No, yeah, I agree.
But, yeah, I want to touch on them. They literally throw away 3 points in this game against Brighton, a team also at the bottom. So really, really bad for them. They did bring in a signing on transfer deadline day who we'll talk about. Mm-hmm. But then next game up, United tied Wolves. I don't know if you have any 2 cents on that. I was not surprised this ended in a tie.
No, neither was I.
Bruno Fernandes' debut.
He's probably easily the best player on United during that game.
Outside of Bissaka.
And he played really well, to be honest with you. You could tell that he wanted to, like, I don't know if you saw this game or not, Lee, but you could tell he kind of wanted to get things going, kind of do stuff. What I'm starting to get frustrated now, Lee, is, and it's starting to become clear and clear, is that this coaching staff is not the right staff for this job at United.
Yeah, I watched the second half. Wolves are a tough team to play against. No, yeah, obviously, for sure. But stats wise, I mean, United more of the possession, more of the shots, but like that's how it is against Wolves most of the time. But they didn't really create, at least what I saw, like any like really good scoring opportunities.
No, their first shot on goal from inside the box came in the 71st minute of the game, at home at Old Trafford, and part of that reason had to do also with. So Pereira ended up playing that CM role, and Bruno Fernandes started off as like attacking center mid, which was like what I, you know, what I assumed was going to happen. But then Pereira can't do the job in that fucking center mid position. So what does Ole do? Forgoes Bruno Fernandes, who's arguably, no, not even arguably, is the best center attacking mid in that squad right now, the best creator in that squad right now.
And that's what he was brought in to do.
And moves him to CDM. Are you kidding me? You don't move. Would you riddle me this, Lee, real quick? Would you move Messi outside back would you move Messi center to center mid if someone couldn't do the job there? Like that's, you bring someone else on the bench that can go do that job. You don't move your best creator. So, anyways, I don't want to go on a rant, but what it's starting to come clear to me is that Ole isn't the man for this job, and I just don't really think this coaching staff is doing well at all. I, as much as I love Carrick, McKenna, and I just forgot his name. Ole and Phelan. Sorry, yeah. Phelan. As much as I love them all, and they're all legends, it's just right now, man, they're not.
To be fair, they did not have any other center mids on the bench, but that just goes back to like no depth. Never didn't bring anyone in besides this guy.
Yeah.
In the previous window.
That's them shooting themselves in the foot, like the club, the board as a whole for not, you know, filling in the gaps before the January transfer window. So that's obviously, it doesn't take a rocket scientist to like understand that this is gonna happen. So anyways though, I definitely think there's a new coach needs to be put in there though.
Yeah.
For sure.
I could see him lasting till the end of the season, but I think the season ends, like start fresh. Yeah.
And with Poch free right now, man, and you know, and I know Poch hasn't won anything, but for how well he did with Spurs, with the little money they gave him, and how he brought up youth, and the players he had, how he made them better.
Yeah.
First of all, a coach, number one priority should be to better the players that he already has. And Poch can do that. Mm-hmm. And I think he'd be the right fit. And he's free right now. So, hey, man, I know they want to be like, we'll stick to Ole, but, bro, it's been a year, and I don't really see a lot of direction as far as his tactics. I don't really know. So
no, I don't either. So, but I mean, going forward, they can't afford not have any center mids on the bench, because when they dropped Bruno Fernandes back, I know he was brought in to be a creator, but from the little bit that I saw him in the second half when he got moved back to center mid, the dude does not defend.
No,
guys were walking around him like every single play. It seemed like. So that's a big question mark going forward. If you do not have a sufficient amount of center mids, moving him deeper. I don't think is going to be be the option.
No, you can tell that he's solely for a creative attacking mid. So,
but on a positive note, and I was talking to you about this the other day, when everyone is healthy, and this is also if Pogba stays if they can do McSauce, Pogba as kind of a box to box, and then Bruno Fernandes as a cam. That's actually a very good midfielder.
That's a really good midfielder.
That's a top four midfield.
I agree.
I mean, I still don't know about your wingers because you'll have Rashford, but you don't really have anyone on the other side.
No.
And there's still holes, obviously.
Yeah, they're definitely missing a good right winger, like talented. Daniel James, good. He's a solid player, but you know, shouldn't be starting game in, game out.
Yeah.
When Rashford gets back, we'll help out. But, yeah, you're right. Yeah, they're definitely missing some players. Mm-hmm. More depth in that center mid. Get rid of Lingard. Maybe even Pereira. They're both fucking ass water. And bring in, I mean, like a big club like United, man, you should be bringing in, like, a bunch of top players. You know, bring in a James Maddison, even though, like, maybe he might not even be able to start, but that's Man U, right? The best player who's playing in, who's playing the best football game in, game out should be starting.
Yeah.
Easy as that. With United right now, though, Pereira can play ass 5 games in a row and still start.
Yep.
Like, that's
the luckiest footballer.
Like, when you think about
there.
That, dude, that's how pathetic it is. Like, it's not because Ole trusts him, it's because, like, he's literally
the only
player there. And speaking of real quick,
it helps
also,
that he's versatile.
I don't understand why he doesn't even put on Angel Gomes, Tahith Chong, James Gardner. I know they're young players, but if these guys are fucking playing like ass, you might as well put these.
I'd like to see Angel Gomes because I've heard good stuff about him. Tahith Chong isn't ready.
No,
and I don't think he's going to be.
No, and I think they're leaving too. They're not resigning their contracts.
Yeah, so. He's shown when the opportunities he has gotten that he ain't ready.
Yeah,
but. Yeah, anyway. I'd like to see the Angel Gomes kid.
Yeah,
that one ends 0-0. Adama Traore had a really good game again, looking super dangerous. But then moving on to today, Sunday, this morning, Burnley, Arsenal, 0-0. Was really expecting more from Arsenal in this game. They were extremely underwhelming, pretty boring game all around. Burnley actually had goal line technology involved. They probably should have scored and went ahead. But only half the ball, I think, was over the line. But only 2 shots on frame for each team. Pretty big snooze fest. Arsenal, God,
the Arteta train right now is not hype.
13 ties for Arsenal, by the way. By far the most ties in the league. I think that's definitely worth noting.
Yeah.
That's really all I got to say. But Arsenal, once again, no better off than they were. With
Unai,
so
yeah,
my 2 cents.
Yeah, I think I think a lot of people and fans. I mean, again, dude, I'm not gonna say he's a success or not until after he gets a transfer window. But I don't know, bro. I think a lot of I don't want to say delusional, but I just think a lot of Arsenal fans were thinking that he's gonna come in and be like Pep 2.0. And I'm sorry, man. Like, he's not Pep Guardiola.
No,
he's not. So.
And he doesn't have the players to.
He doesn't even have the players either.
Yeah,
so
he doesn't have the players.
So that's why I want to judge him until maybe if he gets the players he wants to really start judging. But for from what I've seen so far and what I've been watching, I don't know. People are expecting too much from him as a coach. So.
And then lastly, City versus Spurs today. I'll give my 2 cents on this. Story of City season, you know, they have all these chances, 18 total shots, 5 on frame, they miss a penalty, Spurs have 2 shots on goal, and they score both of them, they lose 2-0. And they show how vulnerable they are at the back again. Zinchenko gets sent off. Otamendi, I don't even know what he's still doing at the club. He's terrible. The fact that he's still there is mind-boggling, honestly. But on the plus side, goes back to how no one wants to take a handle on fourth place. You know, Leicester's out of form too. So whenever City drops points, you know that we already know they're not getting first. So it's like they're just gonna kind of win a bunch, lose one here and there, and they're gonna coast into second, most likely. It's like, so I can't even really get that upset.
No, yeah, it's just kind of one of those things.
They're still like gonna play for 2 trophies at the end of the season. I know that's like, I still don't think it should be viewed as a success because ultimately it was gonna be really. I knew we weren't gonna win three in a row. It just wasn't gonna happen given how close Liverpool ran us last year.
Yeah.
But, I mean, Champions League, still a possibility, especially with Laporte back. If they don't win Champions League and they win these 2 cups, I mean, it's not a total failure, but it's definitely not a success of a season in my eyes either. Because ultimately, like, that's what Pep was brought in to do.
Champions League, yeah.
Champions League. And they definitely should not have 6 losses right now. But we'd be kidding ourselves if they were 70 points with compared to Liverpool's 73 or something.
Yeah,
like that. Because shit, dude, three in a row in any sport, that's like
it's really hard.
That's tough.
It's tough.
And they've played in every single competition last year, like far along.
Yeah.
Takes a toll. They didn't bring anyone in the offseason, so these are the same
guys besides Rodri, right?
Yeah, except Rodri.
And he's been, what do you think of him so far? I thought he was going to be a little bit better.
He's been underwhelming, but I think it's partially because Fernandinho set the bar so high in these last two seasons that it's really hard to really overcome that. And I think if he had calm and collected center backs behind him as well, that would have helped a lot instead of having Fernandinho behind him.
Yeah.
But I thought he was going to be better. I don't think he's been bad.
He's just been kind of, average, right?
He's had some very good moments where he's looked very Fernandinho-esque, and then he's had moments where it's like Fernandinho would never make that mistake.
Yeah, yeah.
That sort of thing. Raheem Sterling has been in pretty poor form lately as well, which hasn't helped. Also, last thing I'll say, I watched the whole game today, and I stopped keeping track in the second half. Mahrez didn't go to his right a single time in the first half. No exaggeration, not a single time. You can go back and watch. And it's like, I know you're more comfortable on your left, bro, and I know you're like automatic when you can cut inside and you have enough space to shoot.
But you're too predictable.
You are too predictable. Oh, my gosh. And you have space down the line to go right.
Yeah.
He's
not slow.
You're not slow. You're quick.
Yeah.
If you lose the battle, the one-on-one battle, so be it. But, oh, my God, is he predictable.
Yeah, I know, yeah. That's his, like, signature thing, cutting inside.
He did have some moments today where he put some good through balls in good areas for other people. But, like, in terms of taking someone on one-on-one, oh, my God, he was giving me a fucking headache. But, yeah, I mean, at the end of the day, I can't be, like, too upset because, like I said, it's second place or third place. That's what it's. We're not winning the title.
Yeah, still get Champions League either way. So.
Yeah, it's the ship has sailed of being upset with Premier League games unless they're playing like literal ass. It does frustrate me that they don't take their chances. That's been kind of the story of their season. And they give up.
I mean, they dominate that first half. Yeah. I feel like
despite that, they can't keep shutouts. It's not like they give up a ton of chances.
No,
teams just take advantage of their chances against us because they know they have to.
Yeah, three on target for Spurs today, and two of them were goals.
Yeah.
So, shout out to Berwin though, on his debut.
I think it's. Or Bergwijn.
Bergwijn, yeah.
Yeah.
Berwin. I'm naming Chicago suburbs over here. Berwin.
So that's actually a good transition into our deadline day segment, because he was a deadline day signing for, I think, $30 million from PSV.
PSV, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, so.
He's young, I'm pretty sure, too.
Yeah, he's young. Let's see. He is, 22 years old. They got him for 40 mil, pretty much, from PSV. That was a good signing, I think, especially because he's not a striker, but they are
clinical finish
today. Though, yeah. He's not a striker, but they're definitely maybe lacking a little more options in terms of like forward options. So that was a good pickup for sure. I guess another interest, you know, I think this is probably one of the top ones of the transfer window for sure is Haaland going to Dortmund from Salzburg.
Yeah, I think that's even though it wasn't a deadline day signing, I think that's been the best transfer in the world.
Yeah, yeah.
For this window.
Yeah,
for sure.
Yeah, I was just talking in terms of January, like who's been like good signings and stuff like that. Christian Eriksen is another one as well to Inter. What are your thoughts on that one?
I mean, it was inevitable that he was going to leave.
Inter's making some moves though, bro.
Inter's making some interesting moves, to say the least.
Yeah.
With some wash-ups, but him and Lukaku, I think, were good acquisitions ultimately for Inter Milan. And I think from Spurs' perspective, that opened up some room to bring in Bergwijn, who they definitely needed to ship out. Eriksen, he definitely wanted to leave.
Yeah.
And bring in a fresh face. So that was That was definitely a good business from Spurs, I think.
Yeah, definitely. Because
I think Eriksen went for about the same amount that they bought Bergwijn for, right? Like $30
million? Yeah, about, it was about $30 million, yeah.
Yeah, so they didn't really have much of a loss there in terms of finances. Going back to West Ham, an interesting signing that I thought, Jared Bowen from Hull City, they brought him up for like $25 million. And now I know a lot of people don't watch the championship or pay much attention to the championship, but I like to like go on FotMob and see how things are playing out. This Jared Bowen kid, man, he is the reason why Hull is not in relegation, essentially. Hull City has been pretty underwhelming most of the year, but for a while there they went on a good run of form and they kind of got up towards the promotional playoff spots. But I'm trying to look up his stats here. Bring up the championship. See if it still lists him on Hull City's roster. Probably won't. But this dude had seemingly all the goals for Hull. He had the best match rating. Yeah, I think 16 goals he had and 7 assists. Leader in goals and assists for Hull. Oh, nice. And he's a winger. And that's a lot of goals for a winger, even in the championship, 16 goals. And you play a ton of games in the championship. You play, I think, 46 instead of 38 league games. So and he's playing playing the full 90 like every game. So I think that'll be an interesting one to at least keep an eye on to see if he can like make that jump. Yeah. But he was putting up good numbers in the championship. So I at least wanted to point that one out.
We have, you remember Carrasco, right? Yannick Carrasco?
He
went back to Atletico Madrid from China.
I did see that. And, coronavirus, man. They got China postponed their games.
Yeah, no, I know.
So all those players are literally looking for somewhere to play.
Well, Galo
to United.
And, like, a lot of these Chinese teams, they need to offload them because... They're fucking dumbasses, and all these guys are on like 400K a week wages, so they can't afford to be paying. These guys just sit on their ass for free, so they're all going on loan. I think Yannick's was permanent, though, or was it a loan?
I think it was a loan, but don't quote me on it.
Emre Can went to Dortmund.
Dortmund, that's a good signing.
That's a good signing.
Also, Wolves brought in a couple players. I gotta find him. He's another Portuguese player, I believe. Daniel Podence, he came on as a sub in the game against United. He's from Olympiacos. I actually saw him a little bit in the Champions League group stages. $17 million. He's kind of going to be like their number 10, which we've been saying in the past, Wolves kind of need a number 10. So if he can fill that void, that could be huge for their midfield because right now it's the Traore and Jimenez show at Wolves. And they're really not getting too much production on anyone else.
I agree. Angelino went on loan to Leipzig.
Yeah, I'm indifferent about that. I mean, he's not a great player, but I mean, all the cup games are done now. Like all the the pointless cup games.
Uh-huh.
So I guess it's time to buckle down and either use Zinchenko or Mendy. But I mean, Mendy's injury prone. You still might need a backup left back, but I think Leipzig is still like a pretty high caliber team to get loaned to.
Yeah, no.
So it's not a bad move for him by any means.
No, definitely. Who else? Interesting. Catrone went on loan to Fiorentina from Wolves.
Thought that was interesting because, once again, it's been the Jimenez and Traore show. What if something happens to Jimenez, especially with all these games in the second half of the season? You're going to need a second striker, but I think he only had one goal in the first half of the season.
Yeah, so... overall, though, it was a pretty interesting winter transfer window. Danny Rose went to fucking Newcastle on loan.
Yeah,
I forgot about that one. Yeah,
and Arsenal brought in a couple players. They brought in a Brazilian center back, I think.
Yeah. I don't really know. To be honest, I don't know a lot about him. I don't know if you do or have heard about him.
I don't know much about him. No, actually, I think he played for City or he's on City's roster at least. For a while, like a few years ago.
Uh-huh.
I don't know if he played in a lot of games, but then I think he ended up in the Brazilian league where he moved from, or moved to Arsenal from. Also,
Mandzukic went to the fucking, what league is this? He went to Saudi Arabia or something like that.
Did he really?
Yeah, something like that. I don't know.
Surprise me.
In the Middle East.
Ryan Bennett was the one I was thinking of earlier. Center back for Leicester. Or center back for Wolves that went on loan to Leicester for the rest of the season.
Okay.
So we were talking about how, you know, Shoyunku and Johnny Evans have played just about like every minute of every game, it seems.
Yeah.
So I think that was an important signing for them to bring in. And he's a good center back, played quite a bit for Wolves in the past year and a half or so. Sheffield United brought in this Sander Berge.
Yeah.
Never really heard of him. Don't really know much about him. Any other signings from abroad? Oh, here's an interesting one. You remember when United played Rochdale
yeah.
in the League Cup and that 17-year-old kid
oh,
scored?
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
He signed permanently to Wolves.
Oh, Wolves?
Yeah.
They signed them?
Wolves signed him to a permanent deal. Luke Matheson.
They loan him back over to Rochdale, though, or
or
they keep him?
Yeah, they kept him, or they loan him back to Rochdale.
Oh,
but,
wow, interesting.
I thought that was really cool, because I remember after he scored in that game, he was, like, doing his homework, like, before and after the game, because he was missing school because of the game, because it was during a day.
That's hilarious. That's awesome. Good for him. But, yeah, I think as far as, yeah, those are probably the biggest ones. I mean, Minamino to Liverpool is another one. I haven't seen a lot of them, to be honest, though. He hasn't played a lot. So, but.
One move that didn't get made that I wanted to point out, or a couple moves, I guess. The first one is, why is Chelsea continuing to hang on to Olivier Giroud? I don't think he's played a single game this year. In the league, at least.
I haven't seen him play at all, very.
And obviously, they'd prefer Batshuayi to him, who Batshuayi I thought was going to go to Aston Villa for sure, but they ended up finding someone else.
Yeah.
Why keep him? He's literally serving no purpose. He's probably getting quite a bit of money a week for wages.
Yeah.
If I were Drew, I'd go to the MLS or something.
And he was rumored to the Fire for a little while there, actually, but I actually don't want him. I don't think he's that great. Cedric Suarez to Arsenal, right back.
Oh, okay.
I think that was a pretty good signing. He's been with Southampton, so we haven't really seen too much of him. I think he's going to Arsenal on loan. But the one move I really wanted to point out that didn't happen from an American side of things, Anthony Robinson, he was a left back for Wigan Athletic. He's only like 21 years old. He came through Everton's system, I believe, and then he just like permanently moved to Wigan, I think, like a year or so ago. He was about to get sold to AC Milan, a 21-year-old American kid.
Uh-huh.
Left back. I think he has a lot of potential. Mm-hmm. He's gotten a couple national team caps, but it was all set to go through. Traveled to Milan on deadline day in the morning. Was ready to, like, sign his contract. Italy's a fucking mess, man. He gets there, and they're like, you know, this medical is probably going to end up taking a few days, but at that point, the deadline is passed, so, like, we wouldn't be able to sign you.
Are you serious?
There was some sort of mix-up with the medical. I don't know if that's exactly the details, but it fell through on deadline day, essentially.
That is some... dumb
and
shit.
It was all like the transfer fee was agreed to and the wages, all that stuff was agreed to, and on deadline day it falls through.
Oh my god.
It just goes to show how hard it is to get some of those deals over the line with all those different factors at play. All those moving parts.
Oh
but
my god.
Yeah, so a lot of interesting stuff on deadline day. There is 13 games left in the season, I think, give or take.
Mm-hmm.
Do we got any extra touches for the for the week? I got to look at my Twitter likes. I think I've got a couple. I have one off the top of my head.
Yeah, go for it.
So this was in Argentina. I think this was midweek. I think the Argentinian League. It was so hot it was so hot in the stadium, and the commentators were in a small press box with no AC. And the commentators were so hot in the stadium, I don't know how hot it was that day, but really fucking hot, I guess. They stripped down to their underwear and were commentating the game
in their underwear.
In their underwears. And I think this was, I think you could have watched this game on some networks here, like depending on what like sports packages you had. And the cameraman noticed that these guys were had their shirts off and were talking in the press box, and they got on the freaking broadcast. I don't know if there were any ramifications to that, but that's, I just thought that was interesting.
That's hilarious. That is some, that is, that is just, that's so funky. I don't even know what to say.
Yeah, I thought that was funny as hell.
Let's see. I'm trying to see if I can find anything, but
This one's from Turkey. Beşiktaş are unveiling a new coach, some Turkish guy. And for the announcement, and I don't even think this was on a game day, the fans there in Turkey, no one really talks about it. The fans in Turkey are fucking crazy. And the fans were like lighting flares to celebrate this new coach. And Beşiktaş are having a rough season, I guess. They're like in 7th or 8th place when they're usually like fighting for a title, you know? Because there's only like really three teams in Turkey. They're lighting flares and smoke bombs and shit. So Turkey, if you're ever in Turkey and you feel like, you know, a little risque and feel like taking a risk, go to a game, and but be cautious as well.
That's funny. I guess one of my, this is kind of like a fact. This you might not be surprised, but you may be surprised if I tell you this. So apparently it's been almost a year since Lacazette scored an away goal in the Premier League.
Wow.
I actually didn't even notice.
I mean, Arsenal, we talked about it way long ago now, but Arsenal have not scored as many goals in the past year or so than we probably thought that they would have. So it doesn't surprise me. And they've been really bad on the road as well. Yeah. Infamously bad on the road in the past year or so.
But
doesn't surprise me too much, but yikes, that's a terrible stat for his value. Well,
for
a
striker,
stuff,
yeah, exactly. I don't really have I don't think there's been anything too funny that I've seen that's like kind of like piqued my interest, to be honest with you. What I did want to do though before the end of this podcast was I don't know if you have a golden goal in mind that you wanted to
do yours first. I gotta replay all the goals in my head here.
Okay. So mine's gonna be probably Berwine's goal against City, just because one, it was his debut, so it's dope as fuck. And two, it was actually a really nice goal. He kind of like chested it and then did it like kind of like a nice little volley to the right corner. And that's pretty hype, I mean, for his debut. So, and it was a good goal overall. So that's definitely my golden goal for the week, just because of the meaning behind it.
Yeah, it was definitely, he took it with some class, for sure. And I think he's going to be ultimately a good signing for
Spurs.
I don't have a golden goal, but I do want to give a shout out to the men's national team. They had a game this weekend against Costa Rica. They played a lot of their young guns, a lot of guys that don't have a lot of caps. Some hadn't even been capped with the senior team before. They actually got a win against a pretty solid Costa Rican side.
Yeah.
So whereas I don't have a golden goal, I have that. They actually did a Kobe tribute celebration for the goal they scored. They won 1-0. Ulysses Lines, he plays for, I think, Wolfsburg's under-23s. Mm. He got the goal on a penalty kick, but a lot of good young talent, despite this bad period for the national team, where they've lost a lot of fans after the World Cup catastrophe.
Oh, yeah.
But like Dest coming over, and then a lot of these young kids who are 18, 19 and are right on the cusp of making that jump to the senior side. There's going to be some exciting times ahead. It's just a matter of, does the coaching staff make the correct decisions of who they're calling in for each camp and international break. So
no, I agree. With how big the U.S. is, I mean, there's talent there for sure. So
and it seems like every going back to transfer window stuff, this kind of relates. Seems like every transfer window, teams from abroad are looking at either MLS players or young American players who are still teenagers who they think have a lot of potential.
Yeah.
I mean, that's
Richie Ledesma is another one who plays for PSV. I think he plays with their young PSV team and the Dutch second division, but he's only like 18. And this Lines kid, I think, could be really good. And they've got a lot of good young pieces coming through.
And I think the more the U.S. Soccer Federation supports younger kids that are, you know, early, you know, around 12 years old, 15 years old, that kind of like age group, to focus on, you know, if they're really good, to focus on aspiring to go overseas to play instead of, you know, emphasizing kind of more the collegiate route, which is still like a good route to go. You know, we've talked about this a lot, but I just think that, you know, the U.S. Soccer Federation needs to focus on these kids who they see as really high potential at 15 years old and try to send them abroad.
Yeah, like if you can get them developed really well through the academy system, like a lot of these kids have, and then right before they go to college or maybe 1 year in MLS, 1 year in a lower league in the United States, and then get them overseas to somewhere where they can develop further before making a jump to a first-team squad or whatever. And then hopefully at that point in a couple more years, being good enough to be called up for the senior team for the national team. I think that'll be it'll go a long way,
and it's
it'll enhance the U.S. soccer's image in terms of how they develop players, and as well as the academy's image as well. They need to use that as more of a tool.
Yeah, and it's a proven formula. I mean, if you say you take a look, I mean, you know, like look at your Christian Pulisic, your Weston McKinney's, Dest. I mean, Sargent. I mean, there's so many. I mean, we can name like so many. Adams too from Leipzig. I mean, all these players that are young, that are going over abroad, especially Germany. We're seeing a lot of U.S.
Germany
players
and the Netherlands.
Netherlands, which is actually a perfect place to develop as a young player.
I agree.
Those are the two best leagues, hands down. I think for a young player to develop. So you know, whether that be like not partnerships or forming close relationships with these clubs in those leagues, you know, I don't know. You know, like if you can do that as well. Get a lot of scouts to come over for games here in the United States just to kind of expose a lot of these younger kids that have the talent to go pro, you know, will help them a lot. Because we've talked about this too, you know, for when you're like when you're a kid and you want to go pro in Europe, they pretty much know if you're going to be good enough by the time you're age like 15, 16, right? Like around, it's like around that time. Here, I feel like we wait till like 18, 19, like it's just like it's already too, you know what I'm saying? Yeah. It's already too late, to be honest.
I feel like we're starting to get it more and more, but it's taken.
Yeah, it's taken
a while.
It's taken some time.
Yeah. Well, that's all I got. I think that'll pretty much wrap it up.
Yeah. We announced our winner too. If you guys haven't seen that on Twitter, it was I forgot his name, but he's from St. Norbert's. So shout out to St. Norbert's College, baby.
Yeah, Tyler Kasube is our winner of the giveaway. So congrats to him. Don't worry, we'll have more future giveaways to be TBD.
Yep.
So thank you for everyone who participated. But we are going to go halfway watch the Super Bowl, probably just drink beer instead and shoot the shit. But thank you all for listening, and we'll get back into our regular schedule for this week.
Yep. Thank you, guys. Again, real quick, follow us on Twitter at golden underscore. What is it? I totally forgot.
At golden underscore goal POD. Make sure to smash that subscribe button. Leave that review. Use that word of mouth.
Yeah,
does wonders for us.
It does wonders for us, and we've seen an increase too in viewership as well with you know, the giveaways we do and all that kind of stuff. So thank you guys for your support again. I tweaked out. I totally forgot our Twitter handle and name. So,
and we look forward to having another guest on hopefully pretty soon.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, we're looking into that as well, having some more guests like Jerry mentioned, like either bloggers like Jerry or even some more players. I'm sure we'll have Lenny again too as the forward Madison.
as the Ford Madison season, their season like starts getting up as well.
Yeah.
You know, we have some other couple of buddies too who play pro that we might try to get in contact with as well. But yeah, thank you guys again for everything. So we'll catch you guys again later this week.
See you next time.
Peace.